Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12:13 as we sit in the Showcase Studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio along Michigan Avenue on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's jump right into it. We told you earlier about the Economist Intelligence Unit survey of the worldwide cost of living. And, well, on the phone line now is Stephen Leslie, the lead analyst for the Economist Intelligence Unit. Stephen, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve. I appreciate it.
Let's start with Singapore, but eventually I want you to explain Minnesota to me. But Singapore came in again this year as the most expensive city, fifth year in a row. So I suppose after 4 years, the fifth year wouldn't be that big of a surprise.
Yeah, no, it's not a surprise. There hasn't been a big change in the fundamentals about Singapore in the last year, and seems to be right in the top spot here for a number of years. So if any of your listeners are thinking of getting a transfer to Singapore, they better get a raise on when they go down.
Yeah, what are these numbers about? I mean, this isn't so much about tourism and things like that. This is about if you are going to live there day in and day out, where is more expensive and where is less?
Yeah, that's correct. We have been doing these surveys for a couple of decades, and the original idea was to give companies some guidelines about how to pay their people, whether they're moving people there from other places or whether they're hiring them locally. You know, companies want to be competitive in their salaries and their benefits packages. So this gives them a way to align their compensation for their employees properly.
So Singapore comes in number one, then Paris, Zurich, Hong Kong, Oslo. I'm surprised London is not in the top 10 because I've been there, and I know it's a very expensive city, but apparently not in the top 10 in your survey.
Well, you know, what's happened with London in recent years is that the currency slumped after the Brexit vote, you know, the vote for Britain to leave the Euros, to leave the EU, not the Eurozone, it was never in the Eurozone, but to leave the EU. And so London, which 10 years ago was the third most expensive city in the world, has now dropped to 30th. It's tied for 30th with a couple of other cities,
but
about 30th.
Currency has to do with the reason why you don't see U.S. companies up in the top 10 as well.
That's correct, yeah. The currencies, you know, from year to year, the movements of currencies, as we know, they can vary a lot, and that makes a big difference in how cities come out. Now, the U.S. dollar slumped a little bit, not a lot, in the last year, and so actually the only U.S. cities that were in the top 10, and that was New York and Los Angeles, fell just out of the top 10 in this latest survey. So they're now ranked number 13 and number 14.
So when you look at North America, New York, Los Angeles, 1 and 2, and Minneapolis, I've been walking around the offices today offering people $100 if they would guess the third most expensive city in the U.S. or North America. No one's saying Minneapolis. What's behind their number?
Yeah, that's funny. I'm actually from Minneapolis. I grew up in the suburbs of Minneapolis. Haven't lived there in decades, but still go back a lot to see family. That's what our surveyors found. You know, they go through and they look at the prices for hundreds of things, and not only goods, you know, like clothing and food and that kind of thing, but also the cost of renting or buying accommodations and of operating a car and all those kind of things that can matter in the cost of living. And Minneapolis came third. And yeah, it's a little bit of a surprising result because it's moved up. Well, from last year, it's about the same. But it's definitely moved up the ranks from 5 and 10 years ago.
I want to talk about Chicago tied for sixth with Vancouver and Houston, but let's go to the number 10. Pittsburgh was another little surprise for me.
Yeah, you know, I can't speak really to the specifics of the prices in all of these cities, but I think Pittsburgh, you know, has had a renaissance, and it's gotten more expensive to live there as the cities come back, as young people have wanted to stay, and people, some of them leaving education, have moved there.
They're a good example, aren't they, of a city? They're a great city that's sort of rebranded itself. I mean, they're about education and medicine and things like that. They've been able to, I said rebrand. I think that's probably a good way to put it.
Yeah, well, you know, every location has to work with what it's got, you know. And they all, I think most big cities have something that's really appealing. Whether it's educational institutions or a great location on a lake, in Chicago's case, or, you know, cultural institutions, that kind of thing. And, yeah, Pittsburgh has played a good hand, it seems to me.
I would imagine if you're sitting in Mayor Emanuel's office and you see that you're the sixth most expensive city in North America, and you've got all that you've got to offer here in Chicago, I think we'd take that number. I don't think that's such a bad thing.
Well, it seems reasonable to me. Now, you know, let's put it in context. Chicago, we get given an index score of 83, and what that means simply is that it costs 83% to live in Chicago as it costs to live in New York City. New York City is our baseline. That's 100. So it's you know, almost 20% cheaper to live in Chicago, and that's pretty appealing to a lot of people.
Stephen Leslie is the lead analyst at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Stephen, great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 1223 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're sitting in the Allstate Showcase studio right along Michigan Avenue. It's a partly sunny but chilly today. Taking a look at Wall Street so far today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is in positive territory, up 97 points, the NASDAQ up 15 as we wait for word from the Fed. Steve Burness is in the studio, the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago in Northern Illinois. Steve, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today.
So hang out. I got a little bit to do after work, but then maybe we can go shopping together at Toys R Us.
There you go. That sounds good.
The days are numbered, right? Toys R Us announced they're liquidating.
They're liquidating, correct.
A lot of people, probably for Christmas or birthdays or whatever, were given Toys R Us gift cards, right?
Correct. It happens all the time, not only with Toys R Us, but other retailers. You have these cards that actually end up in your drawer somewhere, and they stay there for years.
I can't tell you
how many.
Oh, my God.
I have several myself.
I'm the worst.
Right.
I mean, I still have, of course, they're useless now, but I bet I could find in my house gift cards that we were given at our wedding 25 years ago.
I'm certain of that. That's what happens all the time. And
So specifically though, with Toys R Us, they're honoring the cards.
They're honoring the cards, which is unusual for a company like that to honor all the way to the end.
What do you mean?
Well, because they're in bankruptcy. You know what I mean? So the Chapter 11. So usually companies, organizations, they usually end up taking the cards to bankruptcy court. And then the bankruptcy judge decides at what point, who's getting paid or what.
I didn't realize that. So if you're holding a gift card and a company goes bankrupt,
it's up to the bankruptcy judge at that point. And okay. Again, I'm not an attorney, but it's usually up to the bankruptcy judge to decide whether or not who gets what kind of
assets. Well, good for
assets.
Jeffrey, then. He's honoring the cards.
They're honoring the cards, which is great, but people unfortunately have to use it quickly. The sooner the better. We always say never let a gift card sit in your drawer, whether it be Toys R Us or anybody else, even if they're in business, because you never know. You know, with borders at one time, and it ended up, even people started taking legal action against organizations.
Well, I would imagine if you wait too long at Toys R Us, you're going to go home with shelving or something.
Exactly.
That's all they're going to be selling.
The faster the better is actually, because you have the better, obviously, items will be, as they get closer to the closing date, you'll have less and less items.
All right, so I heard a couple hints for all of us. Really, though, when you are receiving or giving gift cards, it's not a bad idea, you say, to sort of check out the health of the company.
Exactly.
I mean, I think if you buy a gift card, you're going to assume they're going to be around for a while.
You assume it, but you might want to go to Google and just put their company's name in there and look under the news section. See if there's any volatility in their news about their financial conditions.
Right.
Because a lot of times their stories will come out even before they do file bankruptcy that they're in trouble, financial trouble.
So you kind of know.
You kind of know, but you really take into consideration, use them right away. Steve, I can't stress that enough from consumers over the years. I've been doing this for, again, a long time, 30 years. How many times consumers have came to the Better Business Bureau with these worthless cards and nothing on them. You just please use them. Go in your wallet. Go in your drawers and get them out.
So that reminds me of a story, though. And you tell me, didn't they pass a law? Because it used to be that they could diminish the value every month.
Correct.
Can they still do that?
No, it's not. They last forever, but if the company goes bankrupt out of business,
it's not good. It's never shorter than you expected. Yeah.
Consumers have taken businesses to court after they closed to try to get their money. And it even went to the U.S. Supreme Court and it didn't work.
Okay.
You know, so
and you say also buy with a credit card?
Buy with your credit card. That's everything we always suggest, the Better Business Bureau suggests, buying with a credit card. You have your best protection under the laws.
Why is that?
Because you have time to dispute the charge with the credit card company under federal law. So they have to look into the matter and resolve the matter. If you didn't get the item, then they can't obviously charge you. So even if you have your debit card, use your credit card, because debit card's your money. A credit card's the bank's money.
It's kind of a funny thing because, you know, when you give a credit card, when you give a gift card, It's like dressed up cash,
right?
You know, it's not much more thoughtful than cash, but it looks like you're giving something
a little bit better,
cash.
Right? Yeah,
maybe it's not better though. Right. I mean, maybe we should just go back to, you know, maybe your aunt's check might bounce, but just fill the envelopes with cash in the future.
Well, cash or use it right away. So it's not going to be the next. They're not going to go out of business the next day. Hopefully, you never know in today's world as businesses fold and close. But use them right away. I mean, that's the key because let me go when something's on sale or I'll get to it next week. But if you don't do that,
I'll put it in this drawer.
Right. And you can open a drawer and you'll see how many are in there.
All right, how are things going in general? I mean, it looks like every day I look, there's an Orbitz data breach. There's all this stuff going on.
There's continuously. We hear about identity theft all the time. It happens, like they say now, every 20 seconds to somebody. Again, you can't protect yourself fully. I've been a victim of identity theft. Lisa Madigan, Attorney General, has been a victim of identity theft recently. You can't protect yourself fully. You just got to be vigilant and watch your credit report. Consumers have to remember one thing is get your credit report annually from one source, annualcreditreport.com. That's the free site endorsed by the government to get your credit report. That's usually the first way you understand you're a victim of identity theft.
You say one source, one site, because one site can take care of all of it.
Take care of three different reporting sites. But the government endorses that site. It's annualcreditreport.com. It allows you to get your credit. Even if you don't use your credit cards and don't think you need it, please get it because that's a way to find out if you have been a victim of identity theft in some way.
All right, Steve Burness, if people have questions for you, how do they find you?
Go to BBB.org. You know, we ask before you buy or hire BBB it, and it's so important to come to us first, not after, because sometimes you can't help you, consumers. The company's gone, the business is gone, or they filed bankruptcy, or whatever it may be.
Steve Burness is the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago and Illinois, Northern Illinois. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It's 12:38 here in the Allstate Showcase Studio along Michigan Avenue on this Wednesday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Frank Sennett, he listens every day, but he's on most Wednesdays. Frank from Crane Chicago Business. Welcome back, friend.
Thanks, Steve.
So, we talk a lot about Elon Musk here, and he made news, or he was the subject, I guess, of some news coming out of City Hall today. The mayor wants to build this express train to and from O'Hare, and it turns out the Boring Company, Musk Company, and this other one, O'Hare Express LLC, which seems to be named for the job, Frank, are the two finalists for the project. What do you know about that?
Yeah, I mean, we try not to be boring here, but the Boring Company, Elon Musk, looks like he's going to team up potentially with the city to expand that express train service to O'Hare, and no public subsidy is part of the headline from the mayor's office. So it could be some excitement. It seems like Elon Musk wants to do big projects with big cities across the country.
So the mayor, I think, announced it last year, and at the time said he had a 3-year timetable. So we might be, I don't know if we're, I can't imagine we're just a couple years away from it, something like this opening, because it seems to me like this would be a years-long project to build, wouldn't it?
Big infrastructure. And I mean, unless you somehow could tap into existing lines, but this seems like it would be standalone thing. And maybe, I think, you know, you've heard talk about using that unused superstation underneath Block 37, right?
So right.
There is some potential for having, you know, some work having been done on that station. But in terms of the line itself to O'Hare, I would think it would be a multi-year project. Right?
Exciting idea, though. You'd get to and from O'Hare in 20 minutes. That's the goal. And I'm assuming this wouldn't just be for O'Hare passengers, right? That commuters would be able to use it in one way or another as well?
You'd hope that you could do that. I know that in other cities where they've done this express concept that there has been some commuter access as well, and that's helped make it thrive. But I'm really hoping that Elon Musk will provide those flamethrowers he's selling as an option.
You can't get one, man. You can't get an Elon Musk flamethrower. It can't be had anymore.
We could bring it back in a limited edition, I think.
So Bennett Wakenight, the producer and Loyola alum, who's really not focused this week, Frank. I don't know if you've noticed on the phone. but the one thing he said today says that, you know, I've just had enough politics. So let's talk politics a little bit for Bennett's sake. Greg Hines talked to J.B. Pritzker this morning, right? And Pritzker, it seems like one of the first things he said, one of the things he wants to focus on is changing the income, the way we pay income tax, should he be elected in November.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. In Illinois, we would need a constitutional amendment, which would take about 2 years to implement a permanent progressive income tax in the state rather than the flat tax now that, you know, helps wealthy people pay it at the same rate as the poorest in the state. And so J.B. Pritzker said today that he wants to actually implement something a lot quicker than that as that process moves forward, ultimately to move it through the constitutional amendment. But in the meantime, look at what Massachusetts has done and have a flat tax, but raise that flat income tax and then provide deductions and tax breaks for lower income folks down under the wealthiest ring, and then make it a graduated progressive tax through that mechanism. He says he knows that's a forced construct, wouldn't want that to be the way it is permanently, but he is floating that as his you know, early days initiative on progressive income tax.
I got to tell you, and you know, I do our taxes, and that, so I do my kids' taxes, and it kills me to. The fact that my kids don't make enough money to pay any federal income tax, but they're paying hundreds of dollars in state income taxes. I mean, it just seems a little out of whack.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other things that he said made a lot of sense in terms of revenue generation. In the meantime, on the other end, non-income tax, talking about legalizing pot, could raise up to $750 million a year on taxing recreational marijuana.
Did he bring that up?
He said he believes that proposal could net that much. And then the state could save a lot of money if it promptly paid its bills. Now, that's something we all know. You know, you don't get hit with that extra credit card interest. The IOUs that we're running, we're paying up to 12% interest a year. So when they talk about, you know, cutting waste, fraud, and abuse in government, that is such a waste. So, you know, there seem to be a basket of ideas that he's talking about to put us in a little better financial health.
All right, that's J.B. Pritzker talking to Greg Hines at Crane Chicago Business about that. I'm sure Bruce Rauner will be dropping a dime as well because he's got some ideas, too. Let the race begin. Hey, I'm worried. I haven't seen a meter reader in my neighborhood in years. You know, used to love them coming by, looking in the windows and things like that. Where are the meter readers?
Yeah, so, you know, they talk about the law of unintended consequences. In this case, maybe intended consequences, right, that are finally coming to pass. The smart meter system created a lot of jobs for installing the smart meters for ComEd. We've all seen that, you know, work being done around our houses in the Chicago area. Well, that had created a bunch of jobs during the program. Now that that's tapering off, what it's also done is starting to eliminate jobs. The meter maid, or not meter maid, the meter reader positions, right, are being phased out. So, you know, we've got 400 to 500 meter readers who were routinely employed, nearly 15% of ComEd's workforce. That's all kind of going away. So
Lovely
a lot of
Rita.
Union jobs are disappearing. Lovely. Yeah.
But they're training Lovely Rita to be a lineman?
Yeah, so they're trying to repurpose these people into new careers. But the utility employed 3,515 union workers at the end of last year. That's down 7% from the year before, according to SEC filings from the company. And the vast majority of those job losses were meter readers who are no longer needed.
That's another
of these professions that's going to, you know, be replaced by technology.
Yeah, right. And I was going to say, not to make light of it at all, but, you know, Donald Trump talks about the coal mine workers. This is another example of that. Times change, things change, and people need to find new careers, so sometimes unfortunately. Frank Sennett, Crane Chicago Business, thanks for stopping by today.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. Big shout out to Chi-Town this week as the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business topped the U.S. News annual list of the best MBA programs in the country. It's been on the list for a long time, but this year is the first time it holds the number one spot. So with the field of applicants becoming more competitive each year, is now the time to check out that part-time MBA program? It could lead your career to the next step. And one of Chicago's unicorns is taking their next step as they put $80 million to work. Tempus, a Chicago startup fighting cancer with data research, confirmed a round of funding to further their cancer-ending efforts. This is great news for the company as they continue to work closely with university medical centers across the country, which is where change will likely be happening sooner rather than later. Keep on keeping on, Tempus. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Here we are on a Wednesday afternoon. It's a Wintrust Wednesday, I should say, easier read than said. 12:53 here on 720 WGN. And on the phone line is Matthew Levis. He's the Complex Director of Marketing at W Chicago City Center. That's a mouthful, but I'm really looking forward to talking to you, Matthew, about the news you've got coming up next month. Welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve. We're excited to be a part of the show today.
All right, so the W City Center, it's not opening. It's reopening, or where exactly are we here on this?
Sure, yeah. So it's been open this past 6 months,
okay.
But we've been doing a lot of work in most of the public spaces. So it's an original building from 1928, and you know, every few years we like to do a little bit of a refresh. So the last 6 months have been a great opportunity for us to kind of dig into a lot of the public areas and kind of bring them back to life. So we're doing kind of a nice reveal launch for the space coming up in about 2 weeks, April 5th.
The hotel is at 172 West Adams. I want to start with a quote from the general manager of the hotel. "With this renovation, we set out to disrupt the norm while staying true to Chicago's history." And that's what we're talking about today, the idea of fitting into the neighborhood where your business is. I mean, you've got a business in one spot or another. There's some value in sort of a seamless approach there, right? Fitting into the people who come in every day and leave every day.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the building itself fits right into the local landscape here in the Loop. You know, it's, like I said, you know, a building constructed in 1928, beautiful Art Deco features, classic to Chicago. But tying into, you know, W as a brand, you know, worldwide, we like to, you know, do things a little bit differently. We like to kind of color outside the lines, as we say. So it's this really gorgeous kind of mix of beautiful craftsmanship throughout the hotel, and then really modern, beautiful touches that, you know, we think pay really beautiful tribute to the history in Chicago.
Okay, so I'm reading this, and I don't know if modern or beautiful would describe this touch. Charred wood walls. What's that about?
Sure. So, you know, we love to be able to tell a story. You know, we like to take the hotel experience and make it a little bit elevated. So all the new features that we've added are a part of a greater design narrative. So, you know, Chicago has a tremendous history. Obviously, a huge part of that is the Chicago Fire, where we were given the opportunity to really rebuild from the ground up in most cases. So we found this really beautiful material. It is a charred black lacquer. So it's wood paneling that just on the surface is a gorgeous kind of finish, but as you get up close, you can actually see it makes that charred wood effect. So definitely has sort of that modern approach to it. I get where you're coming from. Maybe not classically beautiful, but I think tying into some of the other fine touches that we added with some of the brasses and the golds that we have accenting everything really makes for a gorgeous finish to the property.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to put it down. I like the idea. I think it's pretty cool. And Mrs. O'Leary, the bucket's there as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, we definitely are, we like to play with a little bit of wit with our design as well and have some fun. So, never proven. In fact, I think they've kind of come out and said that it's definitely not the cause of the Chicago Fire. But the famous story of the bucket getting tipped over, we, of course, turned that bucket into a beautiful gold chandelier hanging in our entry.
So we've got that. We've got this infinity ceiling, which I'd love to see. But tell me a little bit, Matthew, about why this is important and the value of it when it comes to attracting clients and maybe attracting returning clients.
Sure. You know, I mean, we, you know, W Hotels really started as a small boutique hotel chain and really grew leaps and bounds in the last two decades. So, you know, with all of our properties, we've taken a strong initiative to be very reflective of the locations where we sit. You know, your stay at the W property in Times Square is going to differ tremendously from your stay at the property in, you know, in our city here at City Center. Not from a service standard, but just from an aesthetic and sort of experiential standard. So, you know, we want to make sure that we are paying tribute to everything that Chicago has to offer. People are coming to the city, maybe not by choice for work, but some people are going to be coming here to visit, and there's so many great elements and attributes to the city that we want to be able to showcase. And so making the property a reflection of the city where we're situated, and it's particularly in this Loop area, you know, is so important to us because we are, you know, as I mentioned, we like that design narrative element, taking the hotel experience and elevating it just one step further.
Yeah, I like that. Matthew Levis, Complex Director of Marketing, W Chicago, and the big reveal you said is coming up in early April, right?
Yep, April 5th, Thursday.
Great to talk to you. Hope we can do it again.
All right. Thanks so much, Steve. Have a good one.